Speaking of New Jersey, Colleen McKay Wharton is going to present on the Multi-State Learning Collaborative. I'll let her tell you about that, but she's got 15 years experience working and volunteering in various health departments in a lot of capacities. Her primary roles have been public health educator and public health planner, but she's currently working, as I mentioned, on the Multi-State Learning Collaborative as a consultant, addressing quality improvement in many collaboratives within the state of New Jersey.
Good morning. So Les told me while we were sitting up there earlier that I'm the fastest talker up there, but I think maybe I have a little competition, so that's great. Right. So I don't feel like a freak if I start speaking really quickly. Thank you very much for coming in for our 8:30 session this morning. I'll just share this one. Does anyone feel like this is the perception, right? This is sadly the perception out there. Definitely in New Jersey, and I see lots of MLC state representatives out there, so thank you also for coming in this morning. We're certainly working to try to change that perception of what not only what government workers are, but specifically what public health workers are all about. In New Jersey, as Les mentioned, we have a group of mini collaboratives that have been working on quality improvement for the last 15 months as part of a three-year grant, and I'll share a little detail about that first. In New Jersey, we have 15 departments that are a part of this effort, the Multi-State Learning Collaborative. And they are working to change that perception of government workers, of public health, through participating in learning sessions directed on quality improvement and how to apply that, but also on culture change and how do we get people out of that mindset of being government workers and not having to strive to improve things. They've also been learning about accreditation and what's involved with that and working towards that and a host of other categories as well. They've also been involved with a comprehensive planning process where they can not only plan out new ideas to improve systems, but also test those and also evaluate those and learn how to do that effectively. And of course, none of this could have been done without the support of NNPHI, the National Networks of Public Health Institutes, who is supporting and managing this effort, and of course, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, which is underwriting it and funding it. There are numerous national organizations that are involved as well in developing this whole multi-state learning collaborative process, including the CDC, ASTO, NACHO, and others. They're not all listed here. So just a tiny bit of background before we get into the actual work of the departments. The first phase of the MLC project was addressing performance assessment and accreditation of public health departments, and there were five states that were involved in that process for 1 year. The second phase, MLC 2, really focused on quality improvement in the context of accreditation and assessment specifically, and there were 10 states that took part in that. And now in phase 3 for the MLC project, there are 16 states that are involved in this effort. Here in New Jersey, it's the New Jersey, I'm sorry, I'm not in New Jersey, right? I can't say here, I'm sorry. In New Jersey, it's the New Jersey, we're really close though, right? We're like this. It's the New Jersey Health Officers Association, which to my knowledge is the only association in the country that actually received the grant this year. Last year. So the purpose of the MLC3 efforts is to advance the application of quality improvement in public health agencies, also to work to prepare them for accreditation. I'm sure you're all aware that this is now rolling out in the early phases of the accreditation process, but also to contribute knowledge to the national picture of what public health and quality improvement, you know, how do those even fit together? Because that's still a relatively new concept. So in New Jersey, I mentioned the New Jersey Health Officers Association received that funding. The grant was developed and is now being implemented by a steering committee. And on that steering committee, we have state health representatives, representation. We have local and regional health officers that are involved on that steering committee. And just as an aside, the NJHOA health officers are the ones who are actually on the steering committee. And we have the president-elect, the vice president, and then whatever that next position would be. But the point of having those folks there right from the beginning is that helped us to build in sustainability to the effort. So they were involved right from the beginning. We got their buy-in right from the beginning so that when they moved into those leadership positions, we would have their support and they would get it. And then there's also, this is actively managed through the University of Medicine and Dentistry of New Jersey, School of Public Health, that's UMDNJ. And then there's myself on the steering committee as the project consultant. The grant is a three-year grant for MLC 3, and it runs from April 2008 to 2011. Now for some specifics on the health departments that are involved and what they're doing. We have formed what is called mini collaboratives, and that was a term nobody even heard of before this grant process. But essentially what they are two groups of health departments who are working collectively to develop quality improvement efforts within their organizations. I'm going to just explain a tiny bit on how it's set up in New Jersey without making it really complicated. We have something that's called GPHPs. They are governmental public health partnerships. And they're pretty much county-based, and they are a collection of health departments within that county who are working together for collective projects and in collaborative planning. So that process was in place already. The two mini collaboratives that are a part of our effort this year, one is the Monmouth GPHP, and that's what's highlighted here. That's made up of 8 different health departments working together as one mini collaborative. So I hope that makes sense. So that's the Monmouth County GPHP. The southern half of the state is working together as the Southern Regional GPHP. So all of the rest of the counties, as you can see here, are making up our second mini collaborative. So I hope that makes sense. Collectively, that represents 9 counties, 2 larger cities, meaning Atlantic City and Vineland City, and that also reflects about 2.5 million people that are being served through that. So the mini collaboratives have been working on 2 target areas, and there were 2 categories that we were provided by NNPHI. One was process-oriented, and the other was health outcome-oriented. The steering committee collectively agreed that we wanted everyone to address the process-oriented outcome of customer service and customer satisfaction. I mean, not only is that something we all need to work to improve all the time and need to document that, but it is also, it serves as a foundation for quality improvement efforts, was our belief. So all of our mini collaboratives have and will continue to work on customer satisfaction. What that requires is not only that they develop a customer satisfaction process for their programs or services, you know, it's not enough to say, okay, we did a feedback form and give that back. It's not really enough to say, okay, they liked our program, or maybe they didn't like this, and then stick it in a drawer somewhere, which I know all of you do, and we do it too, right? That's not enough. We needed them to have a process where they actually look at that and they develop changes based on that feedback, and then they document it and they test it and see if those changes were an improvement or not. So those are just some of the pieces of the customer service side. For the health outcome target area, the applicants had the choice of 5 health outcome areas, and they could rank their priorities, their preferences on their application. Each of our mini collaboratives coincidentally chose reduce the incidence of vaccine preventable diseases, and this is specifically related to children. Now the reality was, and we saw this quite early, there's no way they're going to increase the rate of immunizations in their region in 1 year. It's just not a realistic goal. So obviously they had to start looking at some other potential measures. So I'm going to share a little bit about what those are in just a second. Through their 18-month participation as a mini collaborative, and we'll have 2 rounds of mini collaboratives. So this first round that I'm describing now will be finishing up in December. They participated in numerous learning sessions related to quality improvement and how do we change the culture. I mentioned that earlier. Customer service in the public sector, like what does that look like when it's not profit-driven? How do we motivate people to be customer service-oriented when there's no, you know, bonuses awaiting? I don't think anybody else gets bonuses, right, for improved customer service, right? We don't either. Funny. We talked about quality improvement methods, specifically root cause analysis and using fishbone models. Certainly PDSA, as was referenced earlier, is very much a part of their planning processes. They reviewed relevant literature that's out there, and there is a fair amount, not as much as there is in healthcare and private industry, but that's growing daily. And then they also worked collectively to develop their project plans. And one of the things that we're really pleased about is that we developed a template for them where their project planning tool was based on the PDSA model. So I don't have any detail on that, but I think that it's something that served us well. So just real quickly, what the Plan, Do, Study, Act model is, you may have seen it as PDCA. The planning phases where they're gathering data, they're reviewing literature, and they're exploring alternate processes to how they're getting their job done, be it their clinic process, their customer satisfaction process, or whatever it may be. And then they test out a new process, and they see if this works. They evaluate it, they test it for a period of time, assess its effectiveness. Was it a change? Was it a positive change or a negative change? Sometimes that happens. They studied those outcomes to assess the benefit and see if this is something that is then worth either implementing and incorporating into their routine functioning or scrapping the whole idea and saying, no, this didn't work at all. This wasn't an improvement. Let's try something else. So this was kind of the model that we really focused on a lot. And in Monmouth County, the Monmouth GPHP, one of the things they quickly realized is that there was no local data available for their immunization rates. Surprise, surprise, right? We'd have some state data. Is it great? Not really. You know, it's not completely reliable. Certainly there was minimal county level data, let alone local data. So their first focus was to develop a baseline, of immunization rates in their communities. So they developed, and you know, the most important term I left out here, it was a retrospective audit. How I left out the word retrospective, I don't know, but I did. So they developed a sampling protocol where they would review 10% of the preschool immunization records, because children obviously need those to get into school. And they looked at age 36 through 60 months. Each department performed these retrospective audits from February through May. And they also looked at their local immunization exemption reports. And I'm sure you're all seeing more and more are requesting exemptions. A total of 818 records were collected, and they used a program called COCASA. The epidemiologists there used that to assess the immunization rates within Monmouth County. And they've shared those results with each other, and they've been studying those. They are now in the process of determining, well, how often do we need to do these audits to see if we can actually make a change? But we also, in New Jersey, have a system that will be implemented, we hope, by 2011, a data recording system called New Jersey SIS, which keeps track of all immunization information. Right now, it's very sparsely implemented, but we're hoping it will become more thorough. So their next steps are to carefully look at that data, and then, based on that data, be able to better define and target their education effort. When they first started this, they were ready to go full force on educating about vaccines, but they really didn't know how to target that, and they wouldn't know if it was an improvement unless they had this baseline data. So they really scaled back their effort. So they're in the process of developing their education programs, and they will be disseminating those materials as appropriate. Southern GPHP really focused on healthcare providers and trying to use them as a vessel, so to speak, to educate that anti-vaccination voice that's out there. How can we better prepare healthcare providers to be able to answer the questions that they hear from parents who don't want to have their children vaccinated? So they surveyed those healthcare providers to find out their preferred way of getting education materials. And what they found was developing tip cards was easy and a very convenient way for healthcare providers to quickly find an answer to these objections that they were getting from parents. So they developed a list of 36 objections to these immunizations so that they could develop their responses to those. In actually doing that, they divided those objections among all of their partners. They developed them. They looked for research and science-based evidence on how to provide, the accurate responses. And they also provided credible sources of information so that the healthcare provider could give that to the parents. Each objection was evaluated carefully to be sure it was valid, that the message was clear, that it was being conveyed accurately, and they are now in the process of developing these tip cards. They've partnered with a local vaccine provider to sort of help them with the packaging and the marketing of this item and to make sure it was a usable resource, and then they'll be developing that toolkit in the spring to their healthcare providers. I just will mention that they're really focusing on the pre-birth healthcare providers, so they're looking at OBGYNs specifically, childbirth educators, lactation consultants, so they want to try to get those folks up front so that when parents are coming before they have the child, before they're, you know, distraught with all the conflicting information out there, that they can have some resources to share with their parents. And I'll just mention briefly the customer satisfaction piece. All of the departments developed customer satisfaction surveys that they're using in different service areas. They applied a software called EpiInfo. If you don't know it, it's free from CDC. You can download this. And they used that as a tool to collect the data and to analyze the data. I can tell you Zoomerang and SurveyMonkey, if you're willing to pay a little bit for it, also work really well, and it's a very easy tool to use. But not only have they been collecting this information, but they've also developed SOPs for their region as to how they are going to collect this information, how often will they analyze it, how are they going to start developing a change of action based on that feedback. So they've really taken it, you know, to a further step, which is what we were hoping to see. So some specific improvements, there clearly was a development of a replicable audit, retrospective audit process to gather local data, which, again, hadn't been done anywhere else in New Jersey. I don't know if other states are more successful with getting local immunization rates. They've been able to gather reliable baseline data, and they've also been this development of the educational toolkit that they'll be able to share with healthcare providers and can be replicated. Some of the images aren't here. I'm sorry. I'm not sure why that happened. But some overall improvements, there is clearly an improved planning capacity amongst those GPHPs that have been involved in this process. There's an increase in regional collaboration on these efforts. Clearly, a foundational knowledge of quality improvement is now there that wasn't there before. You know, we can't guarantee that they're going to incorporate this into every aspect of what they do. We'd like to hope it spreads a little bit, but clearly this has gotten the ball rolling, and it's now becoming more common nomenclature. You know, and we're offering these kinds of educational programs now throughout the state that incorporate quality improvement, so we're trying to keep that message spreading. And then certainly the unified public health response to an anti-vaccination voice, which we do not have, at least in New Jersey. One of the things we've learned is that the PDSA model is a really valuable tool, not only for the documentation of what you do, but for our purpose, we use that as a planning process. So they were really able to sit and kind of map out what they expect to happen. And although that changed over their 15-month participation a bit, and it tweaked here and there, it did give them a map, so to speak, to at least set a course of action. We know that working collaboratively can certainly save resources, can save time, can save energy, but sometimes it's just not worth it. Forgive me. I mean, sometimes it just slows the ball down. So you have to know, and they have to know, what's easier to just get done and what works better when you do it collectively. Some of the surprising things to us is that strategic planning and the basic goal setting, objective setting, how do we do evaluation, they weren't skills that were as present as we thought they would have been in the department. So we needed to really do some backtracking. You know, we started out making some assumptions that the departments had this sort of core knowledge base, and that is not the case at all. So don't make assumptions that they know how to write goals, write objectives, and then how to evaluate those objectives. We really needed to scale back a lot after we had plowed ahead. You need a lot of practice time when you teach a new model, when you teach PDSA, or how to do root cause analysis, or how to do fish bones. You know, they look great when you're seeing it during the session, and then they go back and they have no idea how to do it. So we really, and we needed to step back. We incorporated more time to allow them to practice and to give them more samples and really get it in, you know, as to how this is meaningful in their own departments. And definitely just trying to keep it simple. I mean, we don't bombard with models, and we pick a few and focus on those and really work on their skill and comfort level with those. Was I under 15 minutes?
You're great. We have time for a few questions for Colleen.
I'm sorry. You didn't hear any of that, right? You heard that just was a blur.
Okay, I see one in the back there. Yeah, I know there's more, but stand up so you can see.
I just had a question about when you were going through the process. You mentioned university was collaborating as well with
this. Right.
They
do a lot of the financial management, UMDNJ, and unfortunately he's not here. He had to go to another meeting. And I also actually work out of that office. So they provide a lot of in-kind resources as well for materials, for space to work in, hosting all of the steering committee meetings, but also the financial management of the grant.
There were,
yeah. We have, it's the Office of Local, the director of the Office of Local Health is Mitch Rosen, and he is kind of the lead, and he helped with writing the grant. He was a real lead force in the grant. We have a Louise Widener, who is the director of evaluation for the School of Public Health, and she is actively involved. And we have another health educator there who assists with sort of actually the some of the operational day-to-day logistics of incorporating programs.
But I guess, I mean, I'm making a fine distinction for truly personal reasons.
Oh, that's okay.
The model that we're trying to, it sounds like those are primarily academic staff?
Two of them are, one of them is not.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'd be happy to. Right. Yeah, I think part of it is that finding someone who has a natural passion about it is really helpful, or who at least. But I can certainly give you some contacts afterwards and talk more about it, but exactly what they to want to get involved. Yeah. Yeah. Sure. It's actually coordination. Yeah, that's Mitchell Rosen.
Okay.
Yeah, the New York, New Jersey. Yeah, that's them.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So that's HRSA.
We're not funded through HRSA at all, but Mitchell is a lead in that, in the New York, New Jersey Public Health Training Center as well.
Okay.
So it's not there as
resources. I guess that's what I'm asking.
Oh no! No! Not at all! Not at all! No! This it's purely funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. That's where all of our resources come from. So no, not at all. It's just I happen to be in UMDNJ, and they happen that they're there. So.
Well, I'm just thinking that the sort of the educational part of what you developed would dovetail so nicely with their mission. And
yes.
Maybe
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, they coordinate a lot of the training seminars there at the school, and we actually have talked about, you know, providing talks just like this on quality improvement and how that can be incorporated. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, we do that all the time. The New Jersey Health Officers Association is the statewide group, and we are always presenting at their state meetings. We have a few different public health associations in New Jersey, and whenever there's a statewide conference, we will try to get on that agenda to present and share the resources that we've developed. We also, in New Jersey, have called it the New Jersey Collaborative for Excellence in Public Health. So the website is njcef.org, and we have our resources posted up there as well. And so, and as the GPHP tools are developed, those will be up there as well.
This may be a good time to mention, although it's not in my financial disclosure, Robert Johnson Foundation is funding 16 states.
Right.
In New Jersey, there are, the National Network for Public Health Institutes has a lot of this information on their website.
Mm-hmm.
There's an ongoing effort to disseminate this information and actually put together, I'll get it right maybe, a quality improvement public health practice exchange.
Mm-hmm.
I've got the words right, I may have the order wrong. And hopefully you have this type of information, you know, in a generally available way that you can search and begin to look at these things. So, but I think, you know, Colleen did a very nice job of laying out what that can be. And actually, the section held immediately afterwards in the hallway to tell you exactly what that practice exchange would look like. Colleen, one thing I want to ask you, too, you mentioned the AIM statements, which you started very broad, and then
mm-hmm.
you got down to something smaller, which is, you know, almost inherent in a quality improvement project. I wonder if you could describe how you went from big to, from macro to maybe our manageable micro.
It wasn't easy. I think, you know, when we're starting out with the PDSA model, and, you know, I should mention that there's a Michigan guidebook for, and I don't recall the name exactly, local health and quality improvement. I'm sure you can just Google this online, but Michigan put together this incredible guidebook to help local health departments developing this. And that was what we used a lot. It provided guidance on how do you develop an AIM statement. And I can tell you the ones that our mini collaboratives came up with first were really lofty and really, you know, just like when you're writing goals, right? Sometimes they get so lofty that you don't even know how to begin to address it. The faculty, I can say, at UMD in particular, Dr. Widener, was really critical in breaking those down. And it's no different to me than breaking it down into your action steps. You know, how do you take your goal down to your objectives, down to your, you know, immediate actions to meet each of those objectives? So it was just whittling away at what they were trying, at this big lofty picture. That may not answer, but it just took a lot of time. It really did, because each time they presented something new, we're like, yeah, but how are you going to get to that? You know, and what's realistic, you know, using SMART objectives. It was really not much different. It's just kind of a different name. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Colleen.
Thank you.